out into this wilderness to find. Leaving our country, kindred, our fathers' houses. For what? For the kingdom of God. Let us pray.
Feeling witchy. Yes, we're going to talk about The Witch today, a film analysis.
A companion podcast, if you will, to a previous show we did on The Lighthouse. A little recap. Even though I'm going to advise you to go listen to that podcast, here's what I'm going to advise you to do. Lots of advising going on today. I'm going to advise you to watch The Witch, The Lighthouse, come back, listen to the two podcasts, because they go hand in hand. Like peanut butter and jelly. We're going to talk... So, like, a little quick recap. Yeah, if you don't want to listen to any of my advice, why would you? Why should you? You don't know me. We talked about The Lighthouse. That was the male elements. The male dominance. It has to do with the energies, the duality of male and female. And we talked about Carl Jung with the reconciliation of opposites, the gender roles. We talked about the solvent coagula, how old Edward from Twilight there and William Dafoe played two characters that at first hated each other. Then they started tripping off that whatever turpentine, and then they found love. And they almost pierced the veil and had the homosexual sex. But they didn't quite get there. But we talked about The Lighthouse, which it's phallic in nature. Just the symbol of the lighthouse itself. It's a big old obelisk. Like the Washington Monument is a big old penis. A 555-foot tall penis. 555. Number of the Necronomicon. On purpose. You know how many inches that is? It's only right we compare in inches. 555 feet is 6,666 inches. There it is, the big number. Well, the lighthouse, oh boy. I'm sorry, 6,660 inches. I knew I was off on that first one. I quick did the math on the fly there. So, in the lighthouse, the two guys, the two men, doing this, that, and the other. That was the male portion of duality. The witch is the feminine counterpart. Okay? Because the reconciliation of good and evil is the ultimate end game for these occultists, for the Illuminati. And the penisry of the phallus is evident in the lighthouse. I gave you some scenes. I talked about H.P. Lovecraft. We talk about nihilism a little bit. But ultimately, it's the Luciferian agenda coming to light. No pun intended. And the duality. And again, we compare the witch to the lighthouse in the sense that the witch is set in the 1600s, an isolated environment out in the woods. Then the Enlightenment happens. And we're going to talk about that. So plot spoilers coming up. I've warned you. Same thing with The Lighthouse. That one's set in the 1800s in an isolated island surrounded by the sea. So one is, they're both isolated. One surrounded by the sea, one surrounded by the woods. And Enlightenment happens in both tales. Couldn't be more obvious. But you're not here to talk about The Lighthouse and penises. You're here to talk about the witch and vaginas. So we're just talking about The Witch today. Again, and it's a good movie. And to be honest, the first time I saw it, I thought it was a real snooze fest. I didn't really get it. I didn't really get what the point was. It seemed kind of boring. There wasn't much action. So I'm gonna make sure you understand that the first view of this film, I was really disappointed because it was held in such high regard. On the second viewing, though, recently, after I watched The Lighthouse, I went back and watched it, because it's the same director, Robert Eggers, and The Witch, of course, known by its
alias The Vivivitch, a New England folktale, spelled with two V's. You'll notice that. And the reason for that was he tried to make this real authentic. And back in the days of the early printing press, I don't know if you are familiar with that. Maybe they don't. You know, I'm an old turd. And when I went to high school, we had a printing press. And we printed words on t-shirts. Like a bunch of idiots. In fact, I think that's what my shirt said. It said, I'm an idiot. And when you did it, you loaded up like these little, I don't know, metal letters. And then you ran the ink over them. And apparently, to save cost, back in the 1800s, or the 1600s, excuse me, when the film takes place, they, instead of buying a W, you just used two V's. So that's why you see the Vivivitch on the film cover. Hey, whatever, man, you know? But yeah, overall, it's a great movie. The second, in fact, I don't think I've seen another movie where I disliked it so much on the first go, and then full 180, liked it, I dare I say loved it on the second go, when I understood more of what was happening in the movie. So, let's get into it, right? You're clearly on it for the journey. What's The Witch about? Again, the feminine counterpart of the duality. Obviously, it's about witchcraft. Superpowers, the CDs, they call them, the occult CDs, and the Faustian Pact, the bargain with the devil himself. Now, if you don't want to watch the film, I'm going to give you a little overview of what's going on here. It's a period folk horror set in early New England, a Puritan family confronted by the evils hidden in the woods on their farm. It's the 1630s, and the Puritan family of the story has a guy named William, that's Papa Bear, old daddy, and then his wife, Catherine. So Papa Bear and Kathy, they take their kids out to this isolated farm, and one of the kids is clearly the main protagonist of the story, a girl named Thomason. Previously, I told you about how on the lighthouse, both men are named Thomas, and now in The Witch, Thomason. What's going on there? It's supposed to connect the two, I'd argue. I'd posit. Now, Thomason, she's got a brother named Caleb, and then she's got some twin siblings named Mercy and Jonas. And the film starts out with another sibling. Only this sibling doesn't make it long enough to be on the cast of characters. No, indeed. Her baby brother, Samuel, gets ground up into ointment by a witch in order to give her the powers of levitation right at the beginning of the film. First 5 minutes of the movie. Now, it's a really dark film. It's filmed really dark, so I didn't really catch that the first time I saw it. It made more sense later as the film went on, but I didn't really catch that. And the film, it progresses as this mystery unfolds of what exactly happened to Samuel. Where is that damn kid? Where's that baby? They don't know what happened to him. The witch knows. And this mystery takes its toll on everyone. And before it ends, plot spoiler, we find out that the devil was behind it. The devil's catching bodies. Except for one. Thomason. She makes it to the end, the female heroine, surviving female, she signs the Faustian Pact, and she's off to live her best life with the coven out in the woods. Now, let's talk quickly about the director. Robert Eggers also did The Lighthouse, as I mentioned, already done the analysis on that. And we talked about the symbolism of duality, H.P. Lovecraft, nihilism, Luciferian stuff, enlightenment. He's clearly knowledgeable on the occult, this Robert Eggers fella. Clearly, there's no doubt in that. He knows. And if he should my wonderful listener question my research, let's take a listen out of his own mouth, out of his own words.
I was thinking somehow that a two-hander in a lighthouse, if I found the lighthouse station, could be cheaper and maybe easier to finance than a movie about a bunch of pilgrims praying in the woods. But, you know, in hindsight, you can't make a lighthouse movie without a storm. And so there's no way to do this movie cheaply without it being even more art house than it is. And it is pretty art house. But, you know, again, I didn't think that a movie about a bunch of pilgrims praying would find much of an audience. I'm not an alchemist in my cell doing this stuff for myself. I want to share it with an audience. That's what this creative work is all about, is to kind of, you know, it's lonely being a human being. So we're trying to communicate like what it is to be human. I just don't know any other way. And I like, I mean, I like fairy tales. I like folk tales. I like mythology. I like religion. I like the occult. I like the past. That's where I spend my time. That's where I spend my imaginary time. You know, that's what I read about. That's where I like to play.
So there you go. Right out of his own filthy mouth. He's talking about an alchemist. He's talking about being interested in the occult. He plays in the occult. And it all makes sense, right? And I'm here to help you decode what all that's about.
Hi, this is your host. This is Isaac. And as you know, Patreon is the way this show gets supported. Patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher. And I am going to give a personalized shout out to all the Tier 2 people. Because that's one of the perks of Tier 2. You get so many perks. With Tier 1 and Tier 2, let's get into it. Ida, what up? Big Fezzy, holding it down, holding it down. Daryl, Hector, Howard, what up? I will see. Still holding it down. Jayer, what up? Jeff, Jacques de Molay, the infamous Jacques de Molay, maybe, I don't know. Thank you, though. Kara, KT, holding it down. Matteo, Matt, Prophet7, Raven, Sammy Boy, 94. What up, what up? Sun and Zero, Taylor still holding it down, and last but certainly not least, Whitney still holding it down after all these months. Thank you all for the Tier 2 support. That's the personalized shoutouts for the month. Thank you everyone who listens to the show. Thank you for everyone that supports on Patreon. That is all the Tier 1 and Tier 2 folks. I appreciate you all. You are keeping the show alive and well, so thank you very much. Back to the show.
And in the opening credits, let's walk through the movie. In the opening credits, it's almost ironic because you'll see Maiden Voyage Productions. And look, I'm going to show image. I'm going to share these screenshots on my feeds. If you don't follow me on the dumb social medias, by God, what are you waiting for? Go do it. At Isaac Weishaupt on Instagram. At Illuminati Eyes on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. Anyway, links are in the show notes on IlluminatiWatcher.com. But the Maiden Voyage Productions shows a girl rowing a boat towards what? Towards a lighthouse. This is imagery supporting the reconciliation of opposites. The woman merging with the man, the girl in the boat, the little man in the boat, little girl in the boat, floating towards the lighthouse, the giant phallus. Now, immediately on the film, back to the film, we see the witch. She's grinding up those baby guts for reasons that we find out at the end of the film. She's trying to fly. It's a flying ointment. Now, what basis in reality does this have? Well, I did a little research for you. Turns out it's true. Well, at least the theory's true. Francis Bacon, you recall him. His name comes up often. Architect of the, you know, occult ways that we live in. He wrote about the New Atlantis, which is arguably what America is, the foundation of the New World Order. He claimed that this flying ointment had the ingredients that included the fat of children, wolfbane, fine wheat, juices of smallage, cinquefoil, belladonna, etc. So, if you want to make it, that's how you do it. Let me know how that goes for you. I'm just kidding. Don't do it. I'm here to tell you I don't condone that. Please don't have grind up children. But apparently this is like a real thing, I guess, that they accused the witches of, or maybe they really did. Anyhow, Thomason, the main girl, the protagonist of the film, she is praying for forgiveness for disobeying the Sabbath, for not working hard enough, doing her own will versus God's. She's trying to choose the right path here as a good Puritan family, right? Now, recall that I said in the lighthouse, we were talking about Carl Jung and his penis dreams, about the subterranean phallus, and the subterranean phallus would appear anytime someone spoke too emphatically about the Lord Jesus. Remember, we called him the man-eater? Okay, let me briefly catch up. I'm going to read you. This is Carl Jung. It was a magnificent throne, a real king's throne in a fairy tale. Something was standing on it, which I thought at first was a tree trunk. 12 to 15 feet high and about 1.5 to 2 feet thick. It was a huge thing, reaching almost to the ceiling, but it was a curious composition. It was made of skin and naked flesh, and on top there was something like a rounded head with no face and no hair. On the very top of the head was a single eye gazing motionlessly upward. So talking about the penis. And Jung thought Jesus was the god of death and the phallus man-eater was the same entity. This is all crazy stuff Carl Jung was into. So to bring that back, recall that Carl Jung said whenever someone spoke too emphatically about the Lord Jesus, the man-eater would show. The demon. The god of death. And here in the film, Thomason is praying to God. Could it be a connection? Maybe. Could be. You know? This is about a Puritan family. We're not really sure why they're out in the woods. But they are clearly concerned with their Christianity. Now, Caleb, he asks if his mother, Caleb is asking if his missing brother, Samuel, is in hell. Because the kids are living in utter fear of God at this point, and the entire family is constantly praying for God's mercy, crying in fear, arguably summoning this man-eater penis demon that Carl Jung was talking about.
Go to the brook before you let the witch take Sam.
Quietly.
It were a wolf stole Sam.
A witch. I've seen her in her riding cloak about the wood.
Father showed me the tracks.
It was a witch.
Aye. It was a witch, Mercy. You speak aright.
Thomason.
It was I.
Liar.
'Twas I what stole him. I be the witch of the wood.
Liar. Liar.
I am.
Listen not to her, Mercy.
I am that very witch. When I sleep, my spirit slips away from my body and dances naked with the devil. So I signed his book.
No.
He bade me bring him an unbaptized babe. So I stole Sam and I gave him to my master. And I'll make any man or thing else vanish I like.
No.
Aye. And I'll vanish thee too if thou displeaseth me.
Be quiet.
Mercy! She's blood telling fantasies.
Perchance I'll boil and bake thee. Since we're a lack of food.
Stop!
Stop, Thomason!
True.
It is, old thing, how I crave to sink my teeth into thy pink flesh. If ever thou tellest thy mother of this, I'll witch thee and thy mother and draw this too. Stop thy tears and swear thy silence.
I swear.
You'll not tell mother nor father.
I swear.
Thomason, let her alone.
Get away from the killer or she'll witch thee.
Now, Papa Bear, he's shooting at a bunny out there in the woods and gets his own eye blasted. Symbolic of the all-seeing eye. Parallels to the lighthouse with Ephraim, you know, Edward, sparkly vampire Edward, Ephraim, and he has the all-seeing eye damage at the end of that movie. Again, we're referencing the occult symbolism, which the director has already admitted to knowing about in the film. Thomason, she's talking to her brother about how she wants an apple. And previously in the film, the brother was out in the woods looking for apples. The apples play a very curious element in the movie. The apples are analogous to Lucifer and the serpent, of course. Of course. You know the tale. The Garden of Eden. The serpent gets Eve to eat the apple, and then Eve, the temptress, gets Adam to eat the apple. Punishing all of us forever. Now, and of course, you got the light of the lighthouse, which is the same idea, right? The serpent, the light bearer, Lucifer, apples. Apples, of course, were actually symbolic of Lucifer in the sense that Venus and the way the stars align with Venus, the five stars, look like the seeds of the apple, of the inside of an apple. Now, Thomason, she tells her sister that she's the witch. And she took Sam, not a wolf. She's just trying to scare her sister. And she talks about how she signed the devil's book and gave Sam to the master. And she has the power to make any man disappear and all this stuff.
Just remember John Kemp's son. That first winter he was tormented of Indian magic.
She's not the same.
This is unnatural providence.
I know not that.
Look at my son. Will.
What?
Think.
Think what?
Think.
I have no thought.
Does this not look like witchcraft?
What witch? Who does this then? Who? I thought she was a child.
Now, how did she know all that, right? She knew it, and by the end of the film, you see it come to fruition. Turns out to be true. Now, the same bunny that Papa Bear tried to shoot shows up again when Thomason is tending to these animals and there's this ominous music. It didn't die. The rabbit, of course, symbolic of pagan fertility gods. That's what Easter's all about. Ostara. So perhaps it's a play on the womb of the Illuminati. Okay? Because the bunny, symbol for fertility. And it's the witch. It's the feminine side of this argument. Now, Mom, she thinks this whole thing is witchcraft and Indian magic, Native American magic, excuse me, that affected her other son, Caleb. Because Caleb, you know, goes through a bit of exorcism and Papa Bear and thinks Thomason is a witch and she pleads her way out. But Caleb eventually dies. But yeah, Mom thinks it is all witchcraft.
What is this?
Speak.
I am no witch.
Get her from my sight. I'll not have her in this house.
She is no witch, Catherine. What is the cause, daughter? Tell thy mother.
I cannot know for certain.
Thou told me well, thou knew.
I cannot look at her.
Aye, but ye shall. Thomason. Thomason!
Jonas and Mercy. They made covenant with the devil in the shape of Black Philip.
Dost hear that? Ye black minions! Dost hear that, yoke devils? Wake! Wake from this!
Now, Thomason claims that the black goat and the twins are the actual witches here. She's trying to get out of it. But the two went unconscious during the exorcism scene. So now she's on the radar for lying. And only when Papa Bear scoops up the male twin, Jonas, which, by the way, we could look at Boaz and Joaquin, a little play on the twins, maybe, twin pillars. But anyways, Papa Bear scoops up Jonas because he's about to smash his skull in because he thinks he's the witch. And the twins wake up. They both wake up. And at this point, Papa Bear's like, I don't trust none of you bitches, and locks them all up with the goat. All of them are locked up outside, which is a curious choice because they've already got like two dead kids now out in the woods. They don't know what's happening. They don't know if it's a wolf or a witch or what, but he corrals them all up outside. He ain't playing. Now the black billy goat strikes back, and they call him Black Philip, by the way. And presumably, I'm going to throw this out there. Maybe Black Philip, the goat, is a shapeshifter of the witch we see periodically in the film. And I say periodically, I think it's like twice. Once at the beginning when she's grinding up the baby, and then once again in the middle there, if memory serves me correctly. And, you know, Black Philip, he's out there, and he's out there with Papa Bear. And guess what Black Philip does? He impales him and shoves him into a massive stack of firewood that throughout the whole movie, that's what Papa Bear's been doing, is cutting up wood. Because that's what men do. They just work. And that's a reference to my Lighthouse film analysis, if you haven't seen that. But this is kind of a nihilistic idea as well. You know, all this toil and all this work, all for naught. Just like in the lighthouse. These guys are wasting their whole damn lives working, busting their ass, for what? Just to get gored by some goat out in the woods. And have your babies ground up into ointment to fly. Now, Mom, she comes out and she calls Thomason a little whore that killed the kids and Papa Bear. And she starts attacking her. She starts attacking her own daughter. Because, like, now, like, lots of people are dying. And Thomason, she grabs a blade. And she's about to break him off something low. And she stabs Mom in the eye. Right in the all-seeing eye, of course. Of course. Excuse me. Then the fatal blow and you get the pink mist. And now she's dead. Now everyone's dead. Everyone's dead. Thomason is exhausted. And she's like, you know what? I'm going to take a little nap. It's the perfect time to do it. Everyone's dead. Nothing left to do. Firewood's all knocked over. And she takes a little nap. She wakes up and starts trying to talk to Black Phillip. He asks her what she wants and then rattles off a list of all the finest accoutrements of 1600s pioneer living. And, you know, Thomason, she's like, yep, sign me up for all that. He tells her to sign the book, take off your clothes. It's game on, baby.
Dost thou understand my English tongue? Answer me. Canst thou give?
Wouldst thou like the taste of butter? A pretty dress? Wouldst thou like to live deliciously?
Yes.
Wouldst thou like to see the world?
What will you from me? I cannot write my name.
I will guide thy hand.
Now, we're at the end of the film. Easily the best part of the movie. Thomason goes out in the woods. She's apparently signed the deal with the Black Phillip, the devil. She goes in the woods. She hooks up with the coven. And now she's levitating. And if you watch it, at first she appears quite ecstatic, but then she looks to be in agony, maybe even regret. And if you watch the lighthouse in the final scene, Ephraim first contacts the light and he seems like he's in bliss, and then it's agony and death. Is it the same thing? Is it a mirror image? Is it the feminine essence of counterpart to the masculine element of the lighthouse? I'd argue it to be so. Now, another explanation of the baby blood here. Let's talk about that a little more. Since apparently it plays a role, because at the end, she starts levitating, right? You go back to a 16th century demonologist, Johann Weaver. This is a guy who followed Cornelius Agrippa, who I've talked about in the past. And Weaver, he said that the witches made a concoction of baby fat, juice of cowbane, aconite, cinquefoil, deadly nightshade, and soot, similar to what Francis Bacon was saying. Now, recall back in August 2019, I did a show. We talked about Agrippa. And we're going to recap because it actually plays a very curious connection here. Cornelius Agrippa, he created a series of books on occult symbolism. De Occulta Philosophia Libri Tres. Three books on the occult philosophy. And there was something very curious about these books. I'm going to read you from thebat.com. In the rare books and manuscripts collection in the Cushing Library lies Marcus Vipsanius Agrippa's De Occulta Philosophia Libri Tres. In fear of condemnation from the church, Agrippa, and by the way, that is Cornelius Agrippa, Marcus Agrippa. Apparently he's a rapper with an alter ego. In fear of condemnation from the church, Agrippa hesitated before allowing his writings to be published in 1533. Opening the book reveals occult symbols and descriptions for their use, but it also exposes the stories of those who have held it before. Pages corrupted by stains and fading inks sketch the tendencies of readers. During its circulation, the book also gained a note and signature that appears to be written in blood. Now, Baca, not to be confused with Baca Not Nice, the rapper, Baca, a PhD student, she said she's particularly interested in the notes found in the book margins, such as the bloody message and signature. According to Baca, the translation of this message states, quote, "When you have done all that is contained here, I will be at your command. Beelzebub." Love Beelzebub. Since preserving the book means the page can't be tested, it's unclear whether the message is truly written in blood. However, Baca said the signature, Beelzebub, often used as synonym for the devil, indicates serious occult possibilities. Other surviving copies of this book do not contain such unique and unsettling marks. But not all interactions with the book are damaging. Another unique aspect of Agrippa's book is the cover that was changed by an unknown person with unknown intentions. Cataloger and Italian resource librarian Felicia Piscatelli said, "This cover contains sacred music. This ironic way of refurbishing a book containing the devil's signature seems almost sacrilegious, but instead adds to the book's mystery." Quote, "It looks like whoever covered the book got a couple of pages from a chant book and used it as the cover. Whether they were trying to make fun of the chant or whether they just thought it looked pretty, I don't know." And that's it. That's the whole article. Old by Felicia Piscatelli said there's sacred music on it. There's a blood signature to the devil by one of the most famous occultists of all time, Cornelius Agrippa. So, and one of his peoples is one that wrote about the making the levitation out of the baby fat and so on. So in conclusion, let's wrap this up. Duality. It's all about duality. It's the opposing tale to the lighthouse. Recall that Carl Jung and these Gnostics, they spoke fondly of reconciling the opposites. Jung believed good and evil evolved into two equal balanced principles that belong together. The dark side of human nature needs to be integrated into the wholeness. That's what they think. Jung said, "I would rather be whole than good." Being whole fulfills their Gnostic reconciliation. That's what the goat with the boobs is doing. Which, by the way, Black Phillip is. Black Phillip is the Baphomet, the goat with the boobs. It's all here, folks. This guy, Eggers, made two films, companion films, and he wants to reconcile the opposites. Now, the Satanic Temple, they plugged this film because it was non-Christian, it was positive in the witchcraft light. Thomason was this, you know, female figure. She was belittled and abused. She became empowered, took down Papa Bear, sliced Mama Bear up. They say this is a positive movie. That's what the Satanic Temple said. So, yeah. So this Puritan family, they've got dad. They're out in the... It's a patriarchy, right? Everyone's doing what Papa says. In the film, they show us, like, he's kind of the bad guy in the film. He's something he did got them exiled into the woods. They don't really explain what it is. Just another white man ruining the world. Okay. It's all his fault. And then, to make things worse, typical man can't accept failure, can't accept responsibility. He blames Thomason. Blames this poor girl. We're led to sympathize for her in the whole movie. Let's read to you what Jex Blackmore, spokesman for the Satanic Temple, said. It's a criticism of a theocratic, patriarchal society and a fair representation of the stresses that it puts on a community. Now, the Satanic Temple, they got a screener copy straight from Blumhouse, A24. They linked up and they conducted Satanic Temple demonstrations that were pegged to the Sabbath cycle to mirror the stage of the road to Satanism. This is all coordinated with the movie's release, by the way. I pulled you a source from Variety. Quote, they're not after parties, says Blackmore. They were intended to provide an interactive experience so our guests would feel empowered. They were ritualistic elements and speeches that were intended to get people to awaken to their primal selves and rebel against a system of control based on archaic reality. Now, the Satanic Temple, they got into their own mailing list and reached out to potential viewers. Marks the first time that the group, which counts roughly 100,000 members globally, has 13 chapters, which is, of course, the number of witches in a coven. You knew that. And it has 13 chapters in the U.S., and it's the first time they've endorsed a movie. The group says they don't worship Satan. They just promote non-traditional roles and how we should embrace what it is to be a man. Now, this film is part of a huge push on witchcraft and occultism and trying to get women to believe that they can get their power back by becoming witches of the occult. And I get it. Look, I get it. Like, the Christian, organized Christianity generally has a sort of patriarchal feel to it. Generally speaking. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying, like, there's women out there that feel disenfranchised by some of this, and, you know, rightfully so in some cases. Rightfully so in some cases. You like how middle of the road I'm being with all this? Trying to cater to everybody? Keeping everyone happy. It's what I'm trying to do here. But look, we can't, and not to take a page out of Carl Jung's book, but, like, you know, there's no, extremes are no good, right? You can't say everybody does this and everybody should think that. Everything's different, right? There's subjective context to put into place with all this. But what I am saying is that witchcraft is on the rise. They are pushing women into this sort of idea that they can be strong witches. What does that mean? What does that imply then? If they don't have these occult powers, they're weak? I don't think so. Women are very strong. If you ever go to CrossFit, which, as you know, I told you I wouldn't talk about CrossFit that much anymore. But if you ever go to CrossFit, you'll see what I'm saying. Women are stronger than the men. Now, witchcraft is on the rise. Shows have been pushing these occult ideas for an entire generation. Do you remember when I talked about that Russian KGB defector? Talking about how an entire society can change in just one generation of brainwashing. Well, and if you haven't listened to that, I don't even remember when I recorded that, a few months back. That's why you got to stay subscribed and listen to every show, folks. But listen, look at this. Look at all these shows in the last generation with all these tales of witchcraft. Harry Potter, The Magicians, The Order, Sabrina, Charmed, all this stuff. Father Seraphim Rose talked about this 50 years ago in his book. He warned about this happening. Harry Potter, of course, you know, he subtly put all this stuff in there. I've talked about Harry Potter for longer than you care to listen for. But he followed a 7-year curriculum at Hogwarts over 7 books, just like the Ordo Anno Mundi, which is what? A witchcraft organization with 7 degrees. And of course, J.K. Rowling and the Deathly Hallows symbol is a Freemason symbol. It came to her in her dreams, just like Carl Jung's penis monster. Penis devil came to him in his dreams. It's all part of the Aeon of Horus, friends. Because Gerald Gardner, who's founder of Wicca, was in fact buddies with Aleister Crowley. Gardner claims he's a member of the Fellowship of Cretona, a coven of witches out in the European woods. From what I gather, people have never been able to confirm or deny that or whatever. I read an article recently from Slate.com on the rise of witchcraft in the 2010s. I'm going to read you a little bit from it, and we're going to wrap this up. And you're going to move on with your day knowing the truth. Quote, the couple had tapped into something, call it the widespread existential dread caused by the end of the previous decade's instability. And they weren't alone. There's something that's happened in the last 5 years, LA astrologer Chani Nicholas told The Atlantic in its 2018 piece on astrology's resurgence. That's given it an edginess, a relevance for this time and place that it hasn't had for a good 35 years. Millennials have taken it and run with it. New Age, as ye old boomers called it in the 70s, has come back in a major way this decade, shedding its corny rep for well-designed apps and sleek websites. What once was considered fringe or weird or from another era, talking about astrological charts on the first date, getting your aura read with friends, sound baths, is now kind of just regular among millennials. At least according to various market research firms who track the spiritual industry, one pegging the mystical services market as a $2.2 billion industry. I call it the palatable occult. My first genuine experience with the palatable occult didn't happen until 2017. Several of my friends were already occult curious or occult serious, and I smelled my fair share of ancient burning wood, held crystals at friends' homes, and got a tarot reading from a guy I dated briefly. I pulled the death card, which he quickly explained didn't mean I was going to croak, but a metaphor for transition. I remained cynical. The trend seemed silly and manufactured, a distraction from the all-consuming Trump-era resistance and the result of a nefarious and ascendant wellness industry that just wanted to take my money. Then it kind of keeps going on. Then, let's resume here. So why did the mystical trend take off and get to me too? Big features in the New Yorker, New York Times, and Atlantic all pointed to the internet for astrology's rise among millennials. Which, sure, yes, the internet can take credit for the rise of pretty much everything in my life. Others have noted the increase in non-religious spiritual practice corresponds to the decline in religious ones. And then it kind of goes on a little more. And basically, they connect it to the destabilizing force of the financial crisis. Or put more broadly and in a way that appeals to many millennials, I know, the oppression of capitalism. So there you go. They are trying to break us, make us poor, and then empower us through occult powers. So, to sum this up, what is The Witch about? Well, it's about the occult influences, and you can see it all in the film. The duality elements connected with the lighthouse. This is the female side of the same principles of the male elements of the lighthouse of the phallus. It's of course about witchcraft, empowering the young girl, and these superpowers, the seedies of the occult, the levitations. And of course all this couldn't be done without the Faustian pact, the bargain of signing the deal with the devil, selling one's soul to the devil. A topic I talk about in Sacrifice Magic behind the mic. You should check that out, too. If you like hip-hop conspiracies, that's what it's all about. So there you have it. That is my analysis of The Witch. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you checked out all those images I have of the film that I put on my social media feeds. Links in the show notes. Instagram, at Isaac Weishaupt. Twitter, at Illuminati Eyes. I need you to really build up my social media accounts. Because, why? Well, I'm going to turn this into swimsuit pictures or something fun. No, just kidding. Follow so you get all the pictures and subscribe to the podcast. And until next time, stay woke.